At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
I'm John Batchelor with Professor Eric Klein. The new book is a sequel. The first book I recommend is updated now, 1177 BC, the year civilization collapsed. The second book, the sequel, just published after 1177 BC, The Survival of Civilizations, like a really good melodrama. It gives us a moment at the end that if we change our ways, we can get out of this trouble. So we come to, how do we get out of this trouble? I'm going to lead with the survivors who were sophisticated, the Phoenicians and the Cypriots. Now, the Cypriots I'm going to set aside for a moment because they had a wonderful island, but the Phoenicians didn't have anything like an island. They were vulnerable to all of the invasion routes of the Levant. They were also shipboard, in other words, great risk all the time in the Mediterranean, but they were anti-fragile. What does that mean again, Professor? You mentioned it before.
Right, so anti-fragile, borrowed from Nassim Nicholas Taleb, meaning that they flourish in the time of chaos. They take advantage of the chaotic situation and expand out and take over. They are opportunists, as I think you've said, and that's exactly what they do here. And in fact, in going out into the Mediterranean and getting new sources of raw materials, like going all the way to Spain for silver, as it looks like, they are actually able to withstand the Neo-Assyrians by literally buying them off. They are paying tribute each year to Shalmaneser III and others, and as a result are not attacked and destroyed like some of the other cities. So they managed to use their, I would say, the advantage they have and access to the Mediterranean to flourish and even withstand the assaults by the Assyrians.
And the Cypriots manage, but they have an island fortress. Do they feel vulnerable to invasion by the Assyrians? I don't recall that the Assyrians were shipborne.
The Assyrians end up taking over some navies and having proxies and such. The Cypriots, though, even though they are on an island, they're not completely safe. In fact, towards the end, during the collapse, the Hittites say twice that they attacked Cyprus, Tutelia IV and Shupiluliuma II, both say in their inscriptions that they attacked Cyprus, probably wanting control of the copper. The Cypriots are able to maintain some sort of isolation for a while in the Iron Age, but and by isolation, I mean from attack from enemies. But even they are not able to hold off the Neo-Assyrians. And we know, again, this is from the period after the book ends here, but I'll pick it up in the sequel to the sequel that I'm now working on. The Cypriots are eventually overwhelmed by the Neo-Assyrians and incorporated into their empire, such that we have later Assyrian inscriptions naming the various kingdoms from Iron Age and Archaic Cyprus that the Assyrians say now owe them allegiance. So there, the Cypriots are going to be able to hold off the Neo-Assyrians, but not forever. And by 7th, 6th century, they too are overcome.
And now the failures, the Hittites. Now, consistent with this, we've talked about the climate and climate change. Drought for 200 or 300 years, and the rivers changed directions, and you had to adapt. But there was also mention, Professor, of Egypt and Assyria and Babylon having a river system, and that is a plus for them that the Hittites do not enjoy. The Hittites have a river, but it's not anything comparable to Mesopotamia or the Nile.
That's correct. So water, just as it's important to us today, and we worry about, you know, the drought in California and so on, water was important to them back then as well. And I do think that that is part of the reason why the Assyrians and the Babylonians were able to withstand the collapse, because they are on the Tigris and Euphrates River. And I think even though the Egyptians have their own internal problems, they're able to survive, shall we say, because they're on the Nile. And I would actually say in the Late Bronze Age of the G8, as I've called them, the top four were the Egyptians and the Hittites, but also the Assyrians and the Babylonians. And of those four, the Hittites are the only one that don't survive. They're also the only one, as you've just mentioned, that are not on a major river system. You've got the Halys River, but that's not huge. And so, yes, water as a factor needs to be brought into the equation in terms of survival or not back then, again, just as it is today.
The Egyptians, the way you measure them, and this is following the IPCC report from the UN to look at all factors, is they're resilient, but just barely resilient. And so they are vulnerable to history. They're very vulnerable.
Yes, absolutely. So one of the things that I did in my research and in the analyses, which are in the final chapter of the book, and in part to show how relevant it is today, I turned to the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, who won a Nobel Peace Prize in 2007. And they're the ones that issue reports every year on climate change and all of that. But in 2012, they issued a report on extreme risk and resilience and how do you respond to catastrophes. And that is one of the themes that I follow throughout the sequel, is the question of resilience. And what do you do? I mean, after something like Hurricane Katrina, how do you respond? So the IPCC, particularly in their 2012 report, they give excellent definitions. So, for instance, they talk about something called an extreme impact event. And that is how they would have described a late Bronze Age collapse if they dealt with archaeology, which they don't. But they also give us great definitions for transformation, adapting, coping, vulnerability, fragility. And so I took their definitions and applied them to our societies, and that's part of how I rank them, is did they transform? Did they adapt? Did they cope? And the thing with just coping is that you're just trying to get through the day. You're just trying to make it to tomorrow. When you adapt, you're trying to, you know, make it through next week, maybe next year. Transforming, you're trying to figure out how to succeed for the long haul. And that's where transforming comes in with the Phoenicians and the Cypriots, whereas the Egyptians are merely adapting at the most, but more likely coping. And so I found that using the IPCC definitions helped me in my rankings, but I'm also hoping that it makes it more understandable to general readers today as to how this might relate to us and why there might be lessons to be learned, even though those people went down and then tried to come back 3,000 years ago.
After 1177 BC, The Survival of Civilization, Professor Eric Klein. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.